Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the National MS Society Social Security Disability Application Secrets. Your host, Barbara McKeon, will now begin.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Barbara McKeon, and I'm the Director of Employment Programs and Services at the New York City Southern New York Chapter. I'd like to welcome all of you to our final call in our 2014 Employment Teleconference Series and start off by thanking Accorda for their sponsorship of this series. Joining me as hosts on the call this evening is Steve Nissen, Senior Director of Employment Programs with the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C., and Christina Forster, the Employment Services Manager at the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter of the National MS Society. Please know that this evening's call will be recorded and available to you at the end of the series. Tonight's topic is Social Security Disability Application Secrets. Now, every day the Society receives calls from individuals requesting information on if and how to apply for Social Security. Statistically, most applicants are denied the first time they apply. And there are many reasons for this, which our speaker tonight will share, along with insight into what you can do to increase your chances for approval. After our speaker has completed her presentation, there will be time for your questions. Please jot down any questions you have during the call so you're prepared to ask them during the Q&A period. Be sure to ask your question completely, as we will be muting your line once your question is asked in order to allow us to get to as many questions as possible. Also, please try to stay on the topic of tonight's call. I know you probably have many questions about many things, but we would like you to just think about what the topic is this evening and what our speaker can actually address. We will do our best to get to all of your questions. However, due to time limitations, we may not get to all of them, and so we encourage you to call 1-800-344-4867 for more information. I will provide you this number again after we hear from our presenter. So if you didn't have a pen, get one, and later on I'll read the number out again. So at the conclusion of tonight's call, we will be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate this program. And this is a short survey of only 5 questions. So if possible, we really would appreciate it if you'd stay on the line till the conclusion of the program to answer the questions. We're always interested in your feedback. Our speaker tonight is Dolores Gonzalez. Dolores is a vocational rehabilitation counselor in the private sector. She has a bachelor's degree in education and a master's degree in vocational rehabilitation counseling. Ms. Gonzalez is a licensed professional counselor, a certified rehabilitation counselor, a certified disability management specialist, a certified vocational evaluator, a certified vocational expert for the Social Security Administration, and a certified rehabilitation counselor for the Department of Labor. She provides expert testimony in workers' compensation, Social Security disability, divorce, medical malpractice, personal injury litigation throughout the United States. She currently serves as a vocational expert for the Social Security Disability Program. Previous employment includes positions as a college counselor, a disability adjudicator for disability determinations, a vocational assessment counselor, and a non-attorney representative in Social Security disability claims before administrative law judges. Now, at that point, I will turn the call over to Dolores. Welcome, Dolores.
Thank you, Barbara. I've been asked to talk to all of you about the process of applying for Social Security disability benefits. And as Barbara indicated, I work as a vocational expert, usually 25 to 30 times a week in Social Security disability cases in front of the administrative law judges. However, for about 8 years, I was a disability examiner, and I made the decisions as to who would get Social Security disability benefits. I think I'd like to start with the disability application. And what you need to do in applying for disability. There are two ways of doing it. You can either do it online or in person. If you do it in person, you will need to contact the Social Security office and make an appointment so that you can go in and give them all the information for your file. The most important thing is that you make sure that you have the names, addresses, phone numbers, any kind of patient ID numbers that you have from the medical team that you work with. Make sure that you have a list of your medications, who prescribed them, how long you've been taking them, any kind of medical tests that you've had, and then also you will be asked for the jobs that you have performed in the last 15 years. That means the name of the employer, the city and state, the years that you worked there, your job title, a description of what you did, how much you had to lift and carry. They'll also ask you questions about if you have any workers' compensation claims that you filed in the last 15 years. They'll need the claim number, address and phone number of the insurance company. If you have any medical records at home, take those with you so that it could speed up the process. If you have minor children or a spouse, make sure you take their names and their dates of birth, any dates of marriages and divorces. Then they'll ask you to complete a medical and job worksheet, and that's the place where you would tell them that you have multiple sclerosis or you have hypertension or diabetes or whatever you have. Make sure that when you're filling that portion out, that you also discuss the problems that you have related to multiple sclerosis. The major criteria for evaluating multiple sclerosis is whether or not you have muscle weakness, fatigue, disorganization of motor function. You can also have problems with your eyes, you know, with your legs. You have to have medical documentation diagnosing your MS. You have to have a description of the fatigue considered to be characteristic of the MS. You have evidence that that you are actually fatigued. And the person that evaluates your claim will consider the extent of the amount of fatigue that you have based on the degree of what you're doing and the resulting muscle weakness. Now, that means that when you fill out the forms, you need to say, when I walk, I get very tired. I can't walk over a certain amount. Like, if you're not able to walk more than 100 feet, write that down. If you're not able to climb stairs, write that down. If you have to use a cane or a crutch or a wheelchair, make sure you have that. And if most of you probably see a neurologist. And if you have a neurologist, make sure that the doctor's records say everything that's going on with you, the sensory abnormalities, the problems with the vision. If you have problems with reading, make sure that the doctor indicates that you have difficulty reading. Or if you go to an ophthalmologist, make sure that the doctor, you know, says that you have problems with your visual acuity. And sometimes people with MS have problems with the visual acuity changing because of optic neuritis or other things. When you talk about disorganization of motor function, you have to consider gait and station. And a number of people that have MS have an issue with perhaps dragging one's leg or not being able to be coordinated enough to climb stairs or go downstairs. Barbara said that I can tell all of you that I have MS, and that I was diagnosed back in 1990. And I was diagnosed as after having optic neuritis and not being able to walk. And it was not a good time in my life. And I had two young children that I had to support and didn't know if the next day I was going to be able to see or not. And that was very frightening. I think the most important thing for the disability adjudicator to understand is that when they evaluate all of the problems that you have the correct documentation, that they have your best corrected central visual acuity, that they have anything related to it in terms of like Goldman perimetry or possibly visual evoked response tests, visual fields test as the Goldman perimetry, or any type of other test that the doctor has done. A lot of people go in and they say, well, I have MS and therefore I'm disabled. But that's not true. And it has to do with the severity. And the severity has to do with how well you can see, how well you can get around, whether you have the visual field efficiency to be able to walk and be able to see what's in front of you. I think, and to the side, the periphery. I think that some people have issues with talking, with loss of speech, or with problems cognitively. And multiple sclerosis is associated with affective changes, with cognitive abilities, and sometimes people have disorientation. Sometimes they have memory impairment with problems with long and short-term disability. They may have hallucinations, delusions, change in personality, emotional ability. And as a result of having multiple sclerosis, they might have restriction of activities of daily living. They may have difficulties in maintaining social functioning. They may have marked difficulties in maintaining concentration, persistence, or pace. They may have a number of issues that need to be discussed by your medical professionals. The evidentiary requirements or the medical evidence that's necessary should be from acceptable medical sources. They need to be from licensed medical doctors or osteopathic physicians. They could be from licensed optometrists, ophthalmologists, podiatrists, especially if you have problems with your feet, qualified speech-language pathologists. I have to tell you that most of the time they don't like to get things from chiropractors. And they, when they request information, if they don't get it, they always ask for it again. And I think that it would be a good idea if you are having issues in getting the correct information to contact the physician or the medical facility yourself. The medical reports should have the diagnoses, the medical history, the clinical findings, the treatment with the response and prognosis. And also, and this is the most important thing, a statement about what you can do despite your impairment based on the medical findings from the doctor. And what this means is if the doctor will complete a report saying, yes, my patient can sit 6 hours but cannot walk or stand for 2 hours. My patient can see, but the visual efficiency is reduced. If the doctor will complete a form for you saying various things as far as how much you can lift, how much you can carry, how much you can handle, if you are able to handle, if you have problems with your hands, if you have problems understanding or carrying out instructions or responding, or if you're depressed, if you have issues related to working around others or getting projects done, or if you have problems with work pressures in the work setting, if you have an inability to take care of yourself, if you need help, if you have problems interacting with other people, manipulating objects, the doctor, well, the judge or the adjudicator might ask that you go for a consultative examination, and they will decide who it is that you will go to. The consultative examiner will indicate what your diagnosis is, and then they will do a physical examination and perhaps laboratory and x-rays and send this back to either the adjudicator or the judge. And during this period of time, when you're seeing the consultative examiner, they will talk about your daily activities, the location, duration, frequency, and intensity of your pain or other symptoms, any kind of precipitating or aggravating factors, the type, dosage, and any side effects of your medication. And I think that that's a very important part right there, because if you're taking things for muscle spasms or muscle relaxers and you have problems with paying attention, staying on focus, concentrating as a result of the medication, you need to put that in the forms that you complete. You know, don't be afraid of saying, I can't do something, but make sure that what you say is the truth, and that and I believe that you'll be better understood if you do that. I think that if you tell them that you have problems getting going in the morning, or that you need to take periodic rest breaks to relieve your symptoms, that that's very important to understand what your functional limitations are. No one knows what you're going through, and the process is really set up so that you can tell the adjudicator or the judge what's happening to you so that they can better understand what's happening and determine whether or not you meet the listings. Now, the medical listings have to do with the various physical and psychiatric problems that people have. Multiple sclerosis is under medical listing 11, and it's specifically medical listing 1109. And when you have multiple sclerosis and you meet the listing, that's part of the five-step process, and that's the first step. If you meet the listing, if you have everything that's going on when you look at the medical listing, you have the disorganization of motor function or visual or mental impairments or significant reproducible fatigue of motor function with substantial muscle weakness on repetitive activity demonstrated on physical examination resulting from neurological dysfunction in areas of the central nervous system known to be pathologically involved by the multiple sclerosis process. So it's a question of or for parts A, B, and C. So if you have the significant fatigue of motor function, you don't have to have the optic neuritis. You don't have to have the psychological issues. You just have to have one of the parts in order to meet the listing. If you don't meet the listing, you might be able to equate the listing. And if you equate, that means that you're pretty close to meeting it, but not all the way there, but you might have other problems that could get you to the point where you'd be allowed disability. If you don't meet or equal, then they go to the next step, which is whether or not you are able to meet the medical vocational guidelines. And that has to do with your age, your education, and your residual functional capacity. So if you're over the age of 50, you have a better chance of getting Social Security disability than if you were, say, 45. If you were 55, you would have a better chance than if you were at 50. If you're 60, you would have a better chance than at 55 or 50. Under the age of 50, you're considered a younger individual, and you have to meet the listings or equate the listings. Over the age of 50, you're able to be approved based on the medical and vocational aspects of your case. The vocational aspects of your case have to do with whether or not you're able to do sedentary, light, medium, heavy, or very heavy work. If you're over the age of 55 and you're limited to sedentary work and you don't have transferable skills, then you will be allowed disability. So it's very important that when you complete the vocational report that you indicate the jobs that you did and how much you had to lift, how much you had to carry, how long you had to stand, how far you had to walk. And that's important so that the person that's adjudicating the case will know whether or not you can return to the past work that you've performed. There are also parts of it where if you're, say, under the age of 50, you can't do what you were doing before, but there are other things you can do, then the adjudicator will say, okay, this person can't be a cook, but this person could be a telemarketer because the telemarketer is sedentary and the cook is medium exertional employment. And so there's a grid system, and you can look at it. It's online, and it's under medical vocational guidelines under the Social Security tab. And you can see it's a grid that will take you across the page according to your age, your education, and your residual functional capacity. The residual functional capacity will be based on what your doctor tells the Social Security Administration. If your doctor fills out a form and says that you are able to stand and walk 6 to 8 hours a day and can lift 10 to 20 pounds on an occasional basis or frequent basis, then the possibility of you getting Social Security disability is nil. However, if the doctor says that you are only able to sit 2 hours a day and can only walk 1 hour a day, then you're not able to do competitive work. And so you would be able to be allowed as a medical vocational allowance. It's very hard to explain this whole process in just a few minutes, and I'm really doing the best I can based on everything that we have. I hope that when it's open for questions, that I'll be able to answer questions regarding this. Make sure that you have all of the evidence that you'll need for your claim, because it will make it a lot quicker. A lot of claims are sitting there for 3 to 10 months before the initial decision is made. And after that, you would only have 60 days to appeal. And at that point, depending on where you are in the country, it could be up to 2 years before you would get to the administrative law judge level. So it's very important at the beginning to have everything with you or available to the Social Security Administration so that your application will be approved quickly. I think that multiple sclerosis is especially difficult because everyone experiences it differently, because there are 4 different types of MS. And, you know, not everybody understands what we go through with vision, with motor function, with depression, with not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, really nobody understands that, but people with MS really don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, because every day is different. But I think that if you have everything ready for when you go to the office or when you do it on the phone, that will really, really help for your case to get through quickly. One of the other things that I believe would help for some people, if you're not approved at the first level, or if you don't think that you have everything in order before you go to make application, is that you could have a representative in terms of having an attorney to represent you. One thing that I've noticed at the administrative law judge level is that people apply for disability and then they get a lawyer that works for one of the national firms. And I really believe that's a mistake, because say that you live in New York State and the person that you hire is out in Provo, Utah, or in California. Most of the time, they're not used to being with the judges that you'll be standing before. And they don't have an idea of what that judge is looking for, or they really don't know the judge, and the judge doesn't know them. I've seen it over and over and over again that when you have a representative or an attorney from somewhere else, they either don't show up or they have somebody else come in their place. And I think that's a distinct disadvantage for the people that apply, for the claimants. So I think if you were to be represented, the best thing to do is to get someone close by who sees the judge, the administrative law judge, often, so that the judge has a relationship with that attorney or representative. It turns out better in most cases. I think that if you fill out your papers correctly and you have all of your documentation, you're going to be in much better shape. The other thing is that it's very important, especially when you are working with the adjudicator at the Disability Determinations Office, or if you are before the administrative law judge, that you tell the truth. You know, don't leave things out. Make sure that you tell that person or you write down exactly what's been going on with you and how long it's been going on, what kinds of effects that you're having, what limits your activities, what treatment you've received. And I believe sometimes statements from family members help. I believe that if you can get either a doctor or maybe a counselor that you've been working with to write something as to what they see in terms of how you've been responding to treatment. Also, if you have other issues related, or not even related to your MS, if you have diabetes, if you have hypertension, if you have a bad back, you know, make sure that you also tell them about that. Tell them how you're restricted in terms of function related to all of your problems, because the adjudicator has to see you as a total person, not just a person with MS. Don't be embarrassed about, you know, indicating the problems that you have, because nobody knows your problems better than you do. And on the flip side, make sure that if you do have to go before a judge, that you tell the judge the truth. You know, if you don't show up in a wheelchair if you don't usually use one. Judges are very smart usually, and they know when somebody's trying to pull one over on them, and that's not going to help your case at all. If you have problems with motor function, if you've had physical therapy, make sure that you have those records. If you have any type of a statement from any doctor indicating what your functioning is, that's the most important thing. And it usually has to be a doctor that you've seen for a while, not just somebody that you've seen one time. Attending physicians, treaters, are taken more readily by the administrative law judges or the adjudicators than someone that you just see one time. I think that if you are able to have everything together when you go to the Social Security office or when they call you, I think that you're going to be in a lot better place than if you would just call them and say, okay, I want to apply, because they're not going to have everything for your filing. If I think that I don't know if you understand that there are two different types of Social Security disability. There is the Title II program, which is for insured workers, and then there's also SSI, which is Supplemental Security Income, and that's an old welfare program for people with little or no income or resources. And the other thing is that if you don't speak English, they do have translators for you. I think, Barbara, I'd like to open it up for questions.
Okay. Before we do that, I just have one quick question for you, my question. And could you just, what would you say are the biggest pitfalls that people make? What are the biggest mistakes people make when they're doing their application?
I think the biggest thing is not completing the forms correctly and downplaying what their problems are. I think that people sometimes either say too much or say too little. And it's better to say exactly what's going on so that people really could get a good idea of what's going on with you. Also, the other very, very important thing is to get the statement from your attending physician indicating how long he or she feels that you can sit, stand, walk, how much you can carry, how long you can be up every day, whether you have manipulative issues with your hands. Those are all very important. If you can't see close up, if you have problems getting around and you might fall into a machine or something like that because of balance issues, I think that's very important. I think that the fatigue issue is very important. If you need to take rest breaks like every hour, you know, that if say that the doctor says you need to rest for 15 minutes every hour over a work day, you're not going to be able to work competitively. And so, you know, but it has to be what the doctor says, not what you say. If you say that you can't do it, well, if the doctor says the same thing, it's consistent, but you just can't say it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay, I think we should. This is a lot of really helpful information, and I know people have tons of questions. So I think we're going to try to open up the lines now. Operator? Operator, we're ready to open the line for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. And our first question is going to come from Tammy.
Okay.
Tammy, please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez, for all your information that you've given. My question is, I am 52 years old, and I have rheumatoid arthritis and multiple sclerosis. My question, is there an advantage to hiring an attorney rather than proceeding filing by yourself?
Well, first of all, it depends on who you hire. But for the most part, it's better to hire a person when you get past the initial phase, if you've been denied at the initial level. And the reason for that is because some of the forms that you have to complete are difficult. And the attorneys know how to do it. They know how to present your case in such a way that the administrative law judge understands and knows what's going on, and then the lawyer can request the records on your behalf from your medical sources. So I would recommend that you do that. But I also recommend that you get somebody close to home who has a long-running record of working with the judges, the administrative law judges, because I see when people hire attorneys that really don't have any background in this, that it's a distinct disadvantage. And I think if you look online or you talk to other people that have had good experiences and have been assisted by judges or by lawyers, that if you get some names of lawyers and then ask around the community about people's different experiences with those lawyers, I think that's the best way to do it. Because if you hire an attorney who's one of the fly-in attorneys that comes from a different state, you know, across the country, they're not going to know the judges that you're going to be before. And that's not going to help.
Dolores, what I also think maybe the question was also referring to is the fact that she's 55 and has two conditions. That do you think that her odds are higher? And I know without looking at her paperwork and knowing all of her situation, it's hard. But I mean, just the fact that she's got two conditions going, and
well,
the fact that she's 55, that you know, maybe she'll possibly have less of a difficult time if she had just the one.
Well, she will have less of a difficult time, but it depends on how severe her arthritis is and her MS.
Right.
It depends on her residual functional capacity. If she sees a doctor for both and it's the same doctor, have that doctor complete a form that says how much you can sit, stand, walk, lift, carry, if you have manipulative problems, that kind of thing. I think the chances are higher if you have two conditions like that, but I also think that it depends on the severity.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to say,
yep.
Somebody could have MS and also have rheumatoid arthritis but works, 70 hours a week.
Right.
It depends on the severity.
It boils
down to that.
Good point. Okay, we can take our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Kimberly. Kimberly, please go ahead.
Hi, I just want to thank everyone involved in putting this together. I appreciate it, as well as everyone who is listening to this probably appreciates it as well. I have a quick warning. I have 4 children, and at any given moment, one of them might run in here and start screaming. So just beware of that.
Thank you.
Sure. Now, I was approved for disability in 2010. I initially filled out the paperwork all by myself. I figured I was a legal assistant and, I had some type of knowledge and I was smart. I was college educated. But I just want to let everyone know that, you can make one simple mistake on the paperwork. So I was denied and I had to wait, 20 months before I finally got approved. The way I did it was I used a disability representative. I didn't use an attorney. And
right. That
as soon as I used them, I got approved, 3 months after I used them. And I have a question real quick. I just got something in the mail that from Social Security that they are reviewing my disability case. Is there anything that I should be aware of about that? Is that something that I can do by myself, or should I call the disability representative I used again?
No, you can do it yourself, but the most important thing is if you contact your doctor, have your doctor fill out complete a letter indicating what your restrictions are, that you can't sit, stand, walk, however much time you can sit or stand or walk, if you have problems with fatigue, if you have vision problems, what your problems are. It's really up to the doctor because that's what they're going to ask. And if you have that piece of paper in your file and he sends it to them, they will have the documentation necessary to continue your disability.
Great.
Okay? And then it won't cost you anything either.
That's great to know. Okay, I think we can go on to the next question.
Our next question is going to come from Margaret. Margaret, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'm 59 and have secondary progressive MS, and it's been gradually progressive. I walk with a walker and gave up my acupuncture practice because I could no longer stand and function well enough doing that. I continue to work 2 days a week at a sedentary job that's an hour away, ironically, for medical disability in our state. But I no longer can drive. I had 3 car accidents in 2 years because of cerebellar issues. I have trouble with depth perception, and in narrow places I can't, and I don't multitask well in high-intensity situations. So I had a major accident where no one was hurt in February and stopped driving. And there's no other way for me to get to my desk job except that my spouse cut back on work in order to accommodate driving me there.
Right.
That won't be able to continue indefinitely. So the question is the timing. The minute she stops driving me, I need to apply, but I will have had income up to that point.
Well, it depends on the amount of income you have because there's a substantial gainful activity amount, and that changes every year. say that it's $1,100 a month now. You could work up to that amount per month and still be eligible for disability. I don't know what it is this month.
It's It's 1,070.
Yeah, so I thought it was about 1,100.
Too close, yeah.
And but I don't know how much you earn. Yeah, but I think that if you would go ahead and apply and have your doctor write something in the file about what you just said at the beginning of the question, I think that that will help you. Because that shows restriction of function.
Right, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the way to go for that lady.
Okay. Next question, please.
Our next question is going to come from Connie. Connie, please go ahead.
Hi, Ms. Gonzalez. Thanks for taking my call. I am very young. I'm 48 now. And I'm in the approaching the administrative law judge stage.
Yes.
Part of my disability application coming up. Most of my issues with MS, I've had it since 1995. I was diagnosed. They said possible MS, and then 1999 it was confirmed. But much of my issue with my MS is cognitive. My memory and my brain feel like mush, but to look at me, you would think I could be, you know, a rock star. And at one time I was at work, and I had, when I went out of work about a year and a half ago, it was at the point where I really couldn't do my job anymore. And they were telling me, Con, you have to go out or we're going to have to fire you. So I went out. Now I have a company, Allsup, that's helping me with the disability. And Social Security, I think they're looking to see if I can do any other kind of employment. That's where we're at right now. I guess before I go to the administrative law judge, I think they said that there were some recent changes in disability, and they need to see if I can do some other kind of employment. But how do I express my cognitive abilities with, my brain feels like mush.
Well, a lot of times people have neuropsychological evaluations, and many times your health insurance will pay for it, and many times you have to apply for assistance with the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation in whatever state you live in, and tell them the problems that you're having as a result of the MS, and that you have specific cognitive problems, and you have issues with remembering, you have problems with being able to maybe stay on task, concentrating. I don't know if you have any problems with functioning socially, but if you have any of those issues, it can be demonstrated on several neurological or neuropsychological tests, and that can be used as evidence in your case.
That's an excellent suggestion, Dolores, and also going to VR, because sometimes VR will pay for a neuropsychological evaluation, and VR may do their own evaluation and determine that you're not work ready. And all of those things would be really helpful to support your case. However, that all does take time. I don't know when you have to go before the administrative judge, so that's something to keep in mind. But the neuropsych eval really does show cognitive difficulties, and that's the best documentation you can bring.
And you can also ask the administrative law judge if he can pay for the neuropsychological testing, because they have that ability.
Oh, that's good to know. I didn't know that. Yeah. Great.
They can. What happens is that the request is sent to the Disability Determinations Unit in your state, and the people there will schedule it, and then you need to go, and you need to tell the doctor or the psychologist, you know, what's going on with you, and go ahead and go through the testing, and then the report will be sent back to the administrative law judge.
Okay. That's very interesting, very helpful. Good point. Next question.
Our next question is going to come from Debbie. Debbie, please go ahead. Debbie?
Hello, yes. Hi. I have a question regarding your employer. I've cut down. I work at a CPA firm. I've cut down from 4 part-time days to 3 to 2, and my employer knows about the difficulties I'm having concentrating with a lot of noise and interruptions, and it's really getting more difficulty. Would any letter from an employer help? I know you said family members, but...
Well, no, employer also help. If you can get the employer to make a statement on paper, write a letter indicating what's been happening with you in terms of being able to perform your duties because of not being able to stay on task or concentrating or walking or whatever it is that you're having problems with, making sure that they, you know, tell the administrative law judge that, you know, you had to go from 5 days to 4 days, 3 days, 2 days to no days, and that you're not really capable of competitive employment. I think that would really help you.
Great. Good info. Okay, I think we have time for one more question.
Okay, our last question is going to come from Ellen. Ellen, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering, thank you again for all this. It is very helpful. If I'm still working, but I am going to at some point pretty soon have to request disability, is the process still the same? The company I work for right now, I know that I would first go on short-term disability, and then I actually have been with the firm for a long time, so I would go on long-term. And then my understanding is the long-term disability would be the ones to process the Social Security disability applications, I'm sure, with my input. But is that correct, that they would be the ones kind of driving that as opposed to me independently?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They will help you go through the process. And the reason for that is because if they are able to get you on Social Security disability, then they can stop paying the long-term disability. So they have an incentive for helping you. They will pay a representative or an attorney to go and represent you before the administrative law judge. And if it gets that far, they will also help you to complete all the papers that are necessary, and they will send the medical records that they've gathered from your physicians during the period of long-term disability or short-term disability.
I'm just going to add to that, if indeed you did get Social Security, and as Dolores said, that they would be able to stop paying. They would stop paying the amount that Social Security would be giving you. So
right.
if you were to get $2,000, for example, from long-term disability, and Social Security was going to give you $1,500, you would still get $500 from long-term disability. You're not going to get less money, but you're not going to get both. And I think that sometimes people get confused about that.
True.
Dolores, I'm sorry. Thank you so much for all of this. I'm sure we have a ton more questions for people. And so I want to give you all the contact information. If you did not get your question answered tonight, please, please, please email me. That's B. McKeon, McKeon, B. McKeon, at msnyc.org. Please email me your questions, and I will be sure to get them answered. Again, I'm sorry that, you know, we had a lot of people on this call tonight, and there was no way we were going to get to everyone's question. But your questions are all important. We want to make sure that you get the right information. Dolores gave us a ton of really good information tonight. I learned a lot, and I want to thank you again, Dolores, for sharing. You can email me at bmckeon at msnyc.org and have your question answered. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to the operator. Now, we're a few minutes over, but I would really appreciate it if you all could stay on the line for just five quick polling questions. And thank you again for joining us this evening. Operator?
Oh, okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to start our polling session. Our first question is, are you currently working? Press 1 for yes and 2 for no. This now concludes our first question. Please hold while I save your results. Our next question is, how would you rate the speaker? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, and 4 for poor. Please hold while I prepare the next question. Our next question is, how would you rate the content of the program? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, and 4 for poor. Please wait while I prepare the next question. Our next question is, as a result of this teleconference, I've learned reasons why most applicants for Social Security disability are denied the first time. Press 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, 2 for agree somewhat, and 3 for disagree. Please hold while I prepare the next question. Our final question is, as a result of this teleconference, I've gained understanding of what I can do to increase my chances of getting an application approved. Press 1 for agree, 2 for agree somewhat, and 3 for disagree. This concludes our polling session. And is there anything else from the moderator, from Ms. Barbara? This completes your conference. You may all disconnect. I stopped polling already, so I just close it.
Yeah, now you can close it.
You cleared off, like she saved and cleared off.
Mm-hmm.
Stop polling and then.
What was this? 9. Hang up. wanted to